John Daly here. You know what day it is?
Neither do I.
I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable ad-free tales of terror. Thank you for listening. And enjoy the show.
Disclaimer. Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Good evening, ladies and gents, and welcome back to Horror Hill. I'm your host, Eric Peabody, and tonight's episode introduces a new author to the show. That author is Red Bad Andy, and the story is I Never Used to Dream. Our narrator is Simon, a friendly but lonely man living a normal life in a normal city. The only odd thing about Simon is that he never dreams. That is, he has never dreamt before. Now, after a chance meeting with a woman at a party, Simon can't stop dreaming, and it's becoming harder and harder for him to know when he's asleep and when he's awake. Something frightening is happening to Simon, and it gets all the worse when he realizes that he has a very limited amount of time to figure it out. You're listening to the standard edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, and we can scale back some of our less savory means of generating money for the show. By the way, you wouldn't happen to still have all of your organs, would you? And now, from author Red Bad Andy, I give you I Never Used to Dream. Have you ever had a dream that felt so real, it felt like it really happened? A dream that was so potent, it felt less like a dream and more like a buried memory, coming to life and playing in your mind while you sleep, reminding you of thoughts and emotions you never remembered were there? Until recently, I never had, and I wish it had remained that way. Now, I lay awake in a nervous tension, afraid to sleep as I consider the true nature of these dreams. My dreams, dark and twisted as they have become, are they truly mine anymore? Could they be shades of another's life? I don't know. In the dark, these thoughts can warp and twist and become something that I never thought I could create out of the fabric of my own mind. Twisted demons of doubt and uncertainty plague me, and I feel as if I'm going mad. Madness. Maybe that would be preferable. There's a strange sense of certainty in madness. Madness implies a dismissal of reality, a refusal to acknowledge anything as real or not. When there are no real answers, the questions don't matter anymore. If you're not mad, if you try to cling to reality, then you are forced to reckon with questions such as the one I struggle with now. Is what is happening to me real? That question, and the lack of a definitive answer, has forced me to doubt my own perception, thoughts, and sanity. Maybe something in my mind just snapped. It would be the most comforting of notions compared to the alternative. The alternative, which I know could never be true, yet cannot be suppressed any longer. Amidst all troubling questions of my sanity, a much simpler one rises to the front of my mind. Will I sleep tonight? A silly question, I know, one with an obvious answer to almost anyone besides the true insomniacs. I know it seems confusing, rhetorical, and absurd, and yet, I do genuinely ask myself if I should sleep tonight. Indeed, if I can sleep tonight. Is the mercy of rest worth the price? The price of my sanity? It would be merciful. I am so very tired and have not slept in days. The pills, the caffeine, the stimulants, they won't work forever. Am I postponing the inevitable? It can't hurt me. It's just a dream. It is not real. You cannot be real. I scream out loud to my empty room. I check my outburst and fall back into the solemn reverie of my writing. I must finish this count before it's too late. Before recent events, I could never really remember my thoughts or dreams when I slept, to the point where I didn't think I could dream. I had always wanted to remember my dreams, and now I wish I could just forget. My eyes close briefly, and I lurch awake again in a panic. I know it's just a dream, just a terrible dream. It's not real. The soft glow of the laptop, the only light in the room, highlights my panicked countenance and gives it a deranged appearance. I steady my frenzied breathing and try to focus my thoughts. In my haze, I notice something odd. I begin to wonder what happened to the other lights. I thought I had left them on. No matter. I must have wanted it dark anyway. Yes, dark. Perfect to get some sleep. It's so silly, I must just be going crazy. I'm in no danger. All of this trouble simply because of a dream. A sweet little dream. Yes, all this worry just because, for the first time in my life, I had begun to dream. I'm sorry, I forgot to introduce myself. My name's Simon. Yes, Simon, that's right. I feel like I should have more to tell, but I'm having a lot of trouble remembering at the moment. Perhaps it's the lack of sleep. Nevertheless, I don't have much to say about myself. I used to live a quiet and simple life, alone in a small apartment near where I grew up. Few friends or family members remained in my little town, and for some reason, I cannot remember any of their names. I've always been bad with names. It was a lonely life, but I was all right. I had a decent job as a manager in a local store, and despite my absence of real friends, I had an abundance of people I socialized with online through various mediums and social channels. I would also attend the occasional get-together with some people from work. It was at one of those get-togethers that the turning point in my life occurred, and my descent began. I was invited to a birthday party for a coworker and decided to attend. I still don't remember whose birthday it was. Linda, Laura, it was L something anyway. I've always been terrible with names, even with my coworkers. Did I mention that? Anyway, they would get together every week, and I normally made up some excuse as to why I was busy and couldn't go. But this time, I decided to give it a shot. Who knows? I might accidentally have a good time. And in the worst case scenario, it would cost me a couple hours of whatever video game or business I would normally attend to on Saturday evening. So, whatever. It was a slightly boring affair at first. I didn't really have much common ground besides work, so I avoided all but the most direct questioning. I awkwardly mingled in the periphery of various conversations with people I didn't know very well, until at last I was starting to regret my decision, and I decided to head home. On the way out, I bumped into a woman who I didn't recognize from work. After some slight embarrassment for almost spilling her drink, I saw her face and was taken aback. It was a surreal experience, almost like deja vu when I saw her. She looked instantly familiar, yet infinitely mysterious. She had such piercing and unique eyes, such a deep shade of gray. Those eyes unnerved me, but they also attracted me. So, I did something very out of character for myself. Rather than excusing myself out of embarrassment and leaving, I talked to her. She introduced herself, and I learned her name was Sabrina Cohen, and she was new in town, having just moved here the previous month. She also happened to have moved in next door to one of my coworkers who had been invited. They had decided to invite her to come along and meet some new people. She seemed very shy and soft-spoken at a glance, as if afraid of being looked at too closely. But when I looked in her eyes, it was almost as if she was holding something back about her true self. Something dangerous, perhaps predatory. She may have sensed how compelling I found her. Indeed, I was probably bad at hiding just how infatuated I was. Her very presence drew me in. I had to do my best not to be awkward in my attempt at meeting her hypnotic gaze. I was shocked when it appeared she felt the same towards me, since we talked for some time. I was dazed and almost hypnotized by her grace and beauty, her speech, her eloquence, but her eyes mostly. Her eyes, I could lose myself in those eyes. We talked about anything and everything, and I felt like in a short span of time, I really got to know her, and she really knew me. Soon, I noticed the party was wrapping up. We had ended up spending almost the whole time together talking and connecting. We were on the way out when she pulled my arm and looked longingly at me. She leaned towards me and whispered in my ear, "You know, the party doesn't have to be over for us." She left the last word hanging in the air as she fixed me with her eyes once more and grinned at me. I nearly gasped aloud in disbelief that she would be interested in me like that. My brain got stuck in a loop, and I was speechless, just continuing to think, "Oh my God, this is happening so fast. Is this really happening?" I finally tried to reciprocate the statement out loud without seeming too eager. I managed, in a lame stutter, to say, "Oh, okay, awesome. Yeah, let's get out of here." I felt my face redden at how badly and nervously I had said that. I saw her suppress a faint giggle at my own perceived embarrassment, and she took my arm to indicate that she was not bothered in the least. I offered to take her back to my place and see what she had in mind, and to my amazement, she readily agreed, as if expecting me to propose this to her, and she smiled beautifully. I was overcome by the events of the night and elated to have met her. I couldn't believe that I had met a person so seemingly perfect for me. I felt hopeful for the first time in a long time. Looking back now, I know I was a fool. I should have known that in life some things are too good to be true, and hope is the first step on the road to disappointment. We got back to my apartment and we settled in on my couch. I was nervous, so I offered her another drink. Things were going well, and I was thrilled that we were making such a great connection. We were still talking, and she reached out to hold my hand when, suddenly, she paused, looking very confused and almost frightened. I was concerned and tried to take her hand, asking her, "What's wrong?" She recoiled and pulled her hand away, jumping back suddenly as if startled. For a split second, it seemed like her eyes flashed a different color. A hint of green could be seen in them for just a moment. "Are you okay?" I asked, keeping a respectable distance now to not startle her like before. "Oh, I..." she stammered out, looking more and more confused, until suddenly she blinked twice and seemed to regain her confidence and composure. The panicked look was gone, replaced by the dazzling, seductive, and eager eyes from before. The sudden change had worried me, and I was getting a bit uncomfortable. Noticing the apprehension on my face, she leaned in towards me, arresting me with her stare, and before I could utter a word, she kissed me passionately. I fell away from the moment and forgot my questions and concerns. Then she paused, leaned in towards me, and just when I thought she was going to kiss me again, she pressed her lips near my ear and whispered, "Sleep now, and dream your sweet dream for me." I wasn't sure what she meant, but before I could figure out what was going on, I fell into a deep sleep.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
I woke up in my bed to the blaring of my alarm. I had forgotten to turn it off the previous night, and I didn't need to be up this early on a Sunday. I sat up with a start, trying to figure out how I got here. I had been on the couch having drinks with Sabrina. She kissed me. And then... what? What happened? I fell asleep? Oh no, I am such a loser. A pretty girl comes to your house after a party to have drinks with you, and you fall asleep in front of her. Real smooth. She must have taken me to my bed and then left. Well, it's nice of her to tuck me in, at least. Too bad she'll never want to see me again. I felt so embarrassed. I was sincerely thinking about just staying there and going back to sleep, but I decided to get up anyway. Maybe she left a note, I thought, hopefully. Not really believing the idea. I supposed I shouldn't be too negative. I remembered how much we had connected. I decided to look around and see. I was just getting out of bed when something caught my eye overhead. I looked up straight above my bed, and I was puzzled by what I saw. I hadn't noticed it when I first woke up, yet there it was, hanging above my bed like some strange icon. It was an old and bizarre-looking dream catcher. Slightly confused as to the origin of this item, I inspected it. Could Sabrina have left this here? I sat down on my bed and looked up at the thing. It did not look like a traditional dream catcher. It seemed to possess an aura of ancient and incalculable age, yet, paradoxically, appeared almost glossy or shiny, like something new. It looked like some substance had been washed over it to make it look like something that it was not. It possessed 8 small tassels with connected bead strands that dangled beneath the central circle where feathers would be traditionally. The central circle was an arcane pattern of scarlet thread, woven less like a net and more like a circular window. The circle felt so strange to look at, like it would pull me into its intricate angles somehow. Sitting up, I stared more intently at it. It almost felt as if I was being drawn into the image, and for a brief second, I thought I had seen the gleam of gray eyes in the circular frame of the thing. Then I reached up and took it in my hand. It felt cold to the touch, almost icy. This was very strange, and I didn't know any type of material that was not metal or something that could retain a temperature like that. Indeed, it seemed to act like metal, but there was none apparently visible in its composition. I turned the thing over in my hand and noticed a small paper note that had been folded over many times and affixed to the dreamcatcher in a small hollow on the side. Could this be a note from Sabrina? I pulled the note off carefully and unfolded it. It appeared to be some sort of strange poem, written in crabbed and eerie handwriting. It was titled, "The Sweet Dream of the Dead." The actual content of the poem was very disturbing. It read, a dream, so short, so sweet, a lovely thing, you know. But in these dreams, these lovely dreams, where do you truly go? To where you dream of someplace far or someplace very near? The distance moot, whilst dreams a flute plays songs of something dear. Dear to your heart, your dream will start, oft happy will begin. But dreams, oh dreams, so short, so sweet, will fade away again. And once they fade, then you will ask, where did the dreamscape go? It felt so real, so very real, but even you won't know. Then comes the pain and comes the fear, a nightmare now it seems. The ones you love and try to keep will never hear you scream. Yet that's all right, scared in your plight, you'll dash and run and flee. Away from her, away from it, away from all you see. The things you see that cannot be, yet feel so very real. Yet they can't be, you tell yourself, while panicking you'll feel. So you press on in disbelief, press on in mounting fear. A dream, so soft and sweet, is something that you'll hear. Hear from a voice so calm, a voice so crystal clear. The voice says, dreams so soft and sweet must cost you something dear. So try to run down every road and run round every bend. No matter how you run or hide, she'll have you in the end. And in the end, with broken dreams, in your last breath you'll know what faces those who come to find the place where dead dreams go. I felt very shaken and confused when I read the bizarre and terrifying poem that came with the equally bizarre dreamcatcher and resolved to find out where the hell it came from. I was angry now. Sabrina had played some prank on me by leaving this bizarre trinket behind. Was this some sort of cruel joke? I had told her I never dream. At least, I never remember them. Was this some way of making fun of me? I felt unsure of what to do, but also tired, very tired, in fact. I tried to resist the sudden urge, but I fell back onto my bed as if struck by a blow, and rather than fight the strange impulse, I gave in and decided to go back to sleep after all. I awoke, drenched in sweat, my heart racing. I had no concept of how much time had passed since I had fallen asleep. Simon, a voice called in the distance. My eyes finally focused in the gloom, so I could see I wasn't in my room anymore. I was outside, in the middle of a vast and terribly dark forest. I wasn't even in my bed anymore. It had somehow vanished, and I was inexplicably standing in the middle of a dark forest, with no trace of where I had come from or how I had gotten there. All of a sudden, I heard that soothing but ominous voice cry out again, closer this time. Simon. I shivered and reflexively backed away from where I thought the voice was coming from. I didn't know how or why someone was calling for me out here, but I was too scared to move or speak at the moment, so I just stood there and listened as the voice grew louder. Simon, I know you're here, my sweet little thing. Come here to me, and I will help put you back to rest. That voice couldn't be. Was that voice Sabrina's? But how? How was she here? Was she looking for me? Did I sleepwalk all the way out here somehow? Why was it so dark? And why did she not sound concerned, but sounded longing and somehow hungry? I started to back away from the voice without really knowing why. I took a couple of steps in the opposite direction, and suddenly a strong smell assailed me. It smelled like a sickly, sweet aroma of too many types of perfume mixing together. At first, I found the smell unbearable, but soon my opinion changed. It started to smell enticing and delicious, and I found the aroma so irresistible, I slackened my pace. Eventually, I stopped completely, and then I began subconsciously walking back toward the source of the smell. I was staggering forward, almost in a trance, and once again I heard the voice, reassuring but menacing all at the same time.
"Simon, oh sweet Simon, let me help you. Soon this nightmare will be over, and you will find your sweetest dream with me. But first, you must come to me."
The voice drew me in and comforted me, promising me all the dreams I never knew I had and all the things I never knew I had wanted.
"No, don't listen!"
The thought rushed into my head out of nowhere, urgently spoken by a different voice in my head. What the? Who or what was that? It sounded like a woman's voice in my head. Sabrina's voice? But different somehow. I continued slowly walking toward the voice while it continued growing louder and louder, all the while the sweet smell growing stronger, more overwhelming. Then, as I walked, a form emerged from the shrouding vapors of fog and perfume. It was Sabrina. Or was it? She was completely naked, and her form was unspeakably beautiful. And those eyes showed a blazing light that I had never before seen, but only seen hinted in them. The gaze was beautiful, seductive, and lovely, but also dreadful and imperious, brokering no argument about what she desired. She willed me to come forth, and so I did. Any restraint or voice in my head warning of the danger had been reduced to just a whisper now. I walked ever closer towards her, and she outstretched her arms as if to accept me in her embrace and hold me forever. I moved close, almost close enough to touch her, seemingly oblivious to the fact that those dark and lovely eyes were almost completely black now. Then I heard a terrified shout.
"Simon, wake up now! You're in danger! Please wake up! Don't trust her!"
I snapped out of my daze just in time to see that Sabrina had vanished. All I heard was a mournful and dejected sigh, and saw a pair of terrible black eyes fading into the shroud of mist and vapors that had suddenly moved away from around where I was standing. I was very confused about what had happened. Before I had another second to think about the strange event, I thought I heard Sabrina's voice again, pleading.
"No, please, please don't! Please don't!"
Then, silence. What was happening? My vision blurred and, in an instant, I felt displaced, like I was somewhere else, somewhere near where I just was, but not there. It was foggy here, too, and I felt panicked and felt somehow like I was no longer in my own skin. I took a shaky step forward and tripped over a heel, a high heel shoe that I was wearing? I barely had time to register the fact I was wearing heels, when suddenly I cried out loud against any direct impulse under my control. I heard it then. My voice wasn't right. It sounded feminine and nothing like my own. I cried out again without thinking,
"Please, leave me alone!"
That voice, my voice, Sabrina? How? Suddenly, the shadow of a long arm terminating in a wicked claw reached for me, and I was pulled violently into the thick fog, and I screamed one last time. I woke up again drenched in sweat, a fading whisper ringing out in my semi-conscious mind. It was fading fast, yet it called out to me. Who are you really? I shook my head in a confused and terrified daze. I checked and was grateful to see that this time I was in my actual bed. It was noon now, and my alarm was blaring again. Hadn't I turned it off? It was just a dream, wasn't it? A dream. Yes, it must have been. But it felt so real, like I was actually there. Is this what dreams are often like? No, it can't be. This was definitely a nightmare, if anything. If this was common fare, I was grateful I had not been able to dream. At least, not until now. A sound snapped me out of my contemplation. It was the dream catcher, and somehow it had made a harsh, metallic sound while swinging. That didn't make any sense. It didn't appear to have any metal parts when I first examined it, and how was it hanging over my bed again all of a sudden? I pulled it down once more and took a closer look at it. Sure enough, when I rolled it over in my hand, I saw what appeared to be a metallic spike or sliver of some unknown metal, replacing what had once been one of the simple tassels. I saw something slowly appear as I stared at the object. In the center, was it a pair of eyes? They looked straight at me and began to focus and change color from a deep gray to black. I stood transfixed again, lost in these eyes that were somehow familiar. I jumped with a start as the alarm started blaring again. I had only hit snooze instead of turning it off. My surprise was followed by a painful realization. I had dropped the dream catcher, and the strange new metal part had cut my hand as it fell. Why was it sharp? I also realized that, strange as it was, my hand was bleeding a lot for what had seemed like such a little cut. It was even stranger that the blade had no blood on the tip. I regarded the creepy object for another moment and then went to the bathroom to get a bandage for my hand. I didn't want to sit there and wait for answers, so I decided I had no more time to dwell on it. I was going to look for Sabrina and find out where she had found this disturbing item and why she had left it with me. This was just too much. I had to find out what this thing was and where it came from. I left in a hurry for Sabrina's house, at least where she told me she had lived. I had so many questions for her, and she was going to answer them. I arrived at her house a short while later. No car. She might still be home. She had told me she hadn't found work yet since moving here, so she was likely still home at this hour. I tried calling the number she gave me the night before, but instead of going to her voicemail, I heard a message claiming that the person I called had a number that had been disconnected. I tried the number again and received the same message. This was getting weird. I decided to go to her neighbor's house, my coworker from the store, to ask if she had seen Sabrina today. After ringing the doorbell a couple of times, a middle-aged woman answered it. I think her name was Lisa, but like I said, I am terrible with names. Hello, I said, as friendly as I could sound. Oh, hi, Simon, she said, sounding rather confused but not unfriendly. What can I do for you? Well, I was wondering, I stammered, if you happen to have seen Sabrina today? Her car is gone, and I tried calling her a couple of times, but it says that her number is disconnected, so I just wanted to check if you had seen her come or go today. She shifted uncomfortably. I'm sorry, Simon, she said. I have no idea who you're talking about. That house has been vacant for the last 2 years, and I don't know anyone named Sabrina. Are you sure that you're in the right neighborhood? I felt stunned. How could this be? Was she just joking with me? I thought that she had been the one to invite Sabrina to that party. She said that she lived next door to her. But you must know Sabrina. I left with her last night. You had to have seen us together. I spurted out, slightly embarrassed by revealing what I had done yesterday. She said that she lived next door to you, I repeated. No, Lisa insisted. I really don't know her. I'm sorry. Are you sure you're okay? She asked, with concern in her voice. Yes, I'm fine, I managed to spit out. I must be mistaken. Sorry to have bothered you. I'll see you later. All right, Lisa said, waving goodbye and closing her door. What the hell was going on? Maybe it's just a mistake and she actually lived somewhere else. That must be it. I tried calling her a couple more times to no effect. I searched near the neighborhoods of some of my other co-workers for several hours, determined to find some answers. With no luck so far, and with it starting to get late, I decided to return home. Maybe she would be there, I thought. Maybe it was all just a misunderstanding, and I did wind up assuming that she lived in this neighborhood and not next to another one of my co-workers. I got back home, and no one else was there. I sighed. What was going on? I couldn't reach her by phone, and I apparently didn't know where she lived, so I had no idea what to do or where to go or check. I was getting very worried and upset. It was getting pretty late, so I decided I would get some sleep and take the day off work tomorrow to see if I could find out where she had gone or what she was doing. I went inside, got out of my clothes, took a quick shower, and went to my bedroom. The dream catcher was hanging over the headboard of my bed again. Strange, I didn't remember putting it back up. I considered throwing it in the trash, but some compulsion stayed my hand, so I decided to leave it up for tonight. I turned off the lights and pulled the covers over myself. I wondered if I would sleep at all. I was so confused and worried about what had happened that day. Eventually, after tossing and turning for what felt like hours, I drifted into a fitful sleep.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
I slowly opened my eyes. Sitting up, I saw that once again, I wasn't in my bedroom anymore. I wasn't in the forest either. I appeared to be in someone else's house, resting on a filthy couch. I quickly jumped off the disgusting couch and almost tripped over various debris and garbage that had been strewn out over the floor. The place stank like something fetid or rotten, and it was very dark inside with almost no lighting. This couldn't be real. This must be another dream. I tried to find the door to get out of the moldering house. The smell was so oppressive it was making my stomach turn. I staggered further down the hall, which I assumed to lead to the exit, but I saw something that turned me back the other way and made me feel even sicker. There was a door leading to a bathroom that was partially ajar in that hall. And in that bathroom was what appeared to be some sort of amalgamation of various body parts floating in the bathtub. The sickening stench must have been coming from there. I backpedaled until I was in the living room again. I was on the verge of throwing up when I heard something that made a chill run down my spine. It was some sort of scratching, accompanied by a soft, guttural moan. I was terrified. I had no idea what was going on or where or what that could be coming from. I cautiously approached the stairs where I heard the sounds intensifying, fully aware of how bad of an idea that felt like. I had an oddly familiar feeling with this house, despite having no idea where I was. I somehow knew that someone was upstairs and knew I had to check on Victor to make sure he was all right. Wait. Who the hell is Victor? I shook off the odd thought and continued my ascent up the stairs. They creaked as I climbed them, and I grimaced as I made unwanted noise with each step. Finally, I reached the second floor and saw a single open door with a sickly red light glowing out from the aperture. I froze as the moaning grew louder, and a terrible tearing sound was coming from down the hall. I nearly retched again when I saw what appeared to be a severed arm launched out into the hall. I was starting to realize just how bad of an idea investigating those sounds was when I heard a voice call out,
Do be patient, my dear. It's almost your turn. Just stay right there, and I'll be with you shortly. My God, who or what the hell was that? A dawning horror overtook me. I knew that voice. I had seen and heard enough. I started to back away when a shape sprang out of the door. Its figure was bathed in terrible red light, but its image will forever be transfixed into my very soul. It was a terrible and lithe shape of a woman. No, not a woman. No woman could be so horrible. She was streaked in gore and viscera from the unfortunate person she had just finished with, and she licked blood from her fingers with a serpent-like tongue. On each of those fingers, prodigious nails extended out. Or were they claws? And her skin was a shifting layer of translucent colors, one moment jet black, and the next ivory white, and somehow every shade between. Her hair seemed ethereal, as if it were not really there, and floated above her head in a silvery white vapor. But worst of all were its eyes. Its terrible eyes. The eyes had the predatory pupils of some great hunting cat, but the color of the irises was not anything of this world. The pupils seemed to shift between a dark gray and abysmal black, like the darkest pits of the abyss. Her, or rather its, eyes froze me, and I couldn't move or look away. She moved closer to me, seemingly not walking at all, but rather gliding, until she was close enough to touch me. "Hello, little thing," she purred. "I've been waiting for you." She reached out one arm and caressed my face with the monstrous claw.
"Zach, no!"
A voice cried out from down the hall. He was missing his arms, but the prone figure tried to rise and scream a warning. I felt panicked and horrified. What had this monster done to Victor? How did it get into our house? Then I remembered. Wait, how could I remember? This dream wasn't mine, was it? But I remembered the deaths, the terrible nightmares, the warnings, and my name, Zach Thomas. Who is Zach Thomas? The creature disrupted this burst of jumbled memory, and she inched closer as if to kiss me. Then she turned and slashed my throat out with the other talon. I fell back down the stairs, watching my body separate from my severed head. But that body, it wasn't my body. And then I saw only darkness. I screamed as I lurched up out of bed. My bed. Yes. Thank God I was awake. The terrible dream was at an end, and I was back in my bedroom. I stood up in a cold sweat, naked. It was only 4 a.m. I turned the light on. I didn't think I was going to sleep again tonight. Once the light was on, I looked over my headboard, and to my surprise, I saw that another of the tassels on the dreamcatcher had turned into a metal spike. This cannot be happening. What is going on? I decided to look into different avenues with my search and investigate some of the details online, since I definitely was not going back to sleep, and I had already resolved to take the next day off of work. I booted up my computer and searched for any details or stories involving Sabrina Cohen. Maybe I could track her down if she had a history. What I found was deeply disturbing. When I looked up Sabrina's name, all I found was a connection to a year-old police report about a missing person in this county. But that was impossible. I hoped it would just be a coincidence. But then I saw the picture. It was definitely her, absolutely no mistaking her features. Except that I noticed her eyes were green, a very bright green, not the gray color I had seen when I met her. The report was from just over a year ago and read,
Local police have officially declared Miss Sabrina Cohen as missing after her absence from work was noted and later investigated after concerned co-workers had asked the police to look into the situation. The report continued. Miss Cohen lived alone and was not known to be seeing anyone at the time, so there are no suspects in regard to a possible kidnapping. If you have seen or heard anything about her, please notify your local police. What the hell was this? That couldn't possibly be her. I thought someone would have recognized her by now, and she wasn't using an alias or disguises other than maybe some contacts. Did she just come back without notifying anyone? I had no idea what to do next. I continued looking at various police reports in the area and decided to check for any that occurred around the same date in previous years. I was horrified when I saw the obituary for one Zachary Thomas, 32. He had apparently been decapitated in his home over 2 years ago by an unknown killer. His roommate, Victor Gavin, was still reported as missing, but wanted for questioning in possible connection to the grisly homicide. The crime scene photos were even more shocking and sent a wave of icy dread deep into my heart. Mr. Thomas's house was, or at least looked, exactly like the house I had seen in my dream last night. Zach, why was that name familiar? That's my name. What? No, why would I think that's my name? My name's Simon. Yes, Simon. What the hell was going on with my head? I continued to read on in the report and was truly unprepared for the next part. As I reviewed the details of the location where the murder occurred, I looked at the street address and nearly fainted. It was very familiar. Familiar because it was the very same address as the house next to my co-worker, Lisa. It was the exact house that I had believed that Sabrina lived in. No, I said aloud. This wasn't real. This couldn't be real. I must still be dreaming. There's no way it could be the same place. There's no way I could witness a murder that really happened in a dream. But did I witness it? I was murdered. What the? Why are these random memories assailing me? Am I going crazy? When I was dreaming, I felt different, not like myself, and I moved and acted almost like someone else was moving for me. And in the terrible end, when I was killed, I saw a body on the ground that was not my own before it was over and I woke up. Was Zachary Thomas killed by that thing? I thought that was impossible. It couldn't be real. But the dream was so vivid. How in the hell could it just be a coincidence? I was overwhelmed by these revelations. I had no idea what to do. I decided I would check out that house. Maybe I would find something there that might link all this together or explain some detail of fact that I'd been missing or open a new door to the truth. I arrived back in the neighborhood later that day, equipped with a flashlight and my cell phone in case I needed the light or to call for help. I had more than a few questions in need of answering, and I hoped that this little break-in would answer at least a few of them. I had intentionally arrived later in the evening, since I would rather not have to explain myself if I was caught breaking into an abandoned house for what sounded, admittedly, like a crazy person's theory. I parked down the street in case my coworker saw my car parked outside her house and thought I was stalking her, especially after our awkward encounter the other day. Approaching the house, I felt a terrible sense of deja vu and dread. I felt like I had been in this house before, but I had only ever seen it from the outside. I stepped up onto the porch and carefully tried the door. Locked. I was unsure as to how to proceed. Then, an odd thought popped into my head, as if it were a deeply buried memory. I moved over to one of the decayed potted plants that were still on the porch, for some reason, having long since died, just like the occupant. I lifted one of them carefully, reached underneath, and pulled out a key. I somehow knew that it was there. Just as I suspected, after turning the key and handle, The door swung inward with a low-pitched creak, and a faint, unpleasant odor of dust and mildew assailed my senses. It was pitch black inside, probably since the electricity was shut off a long time ago. I silently regretted coming here at dusk and not sometime in the afternoon. I was considering turning back for a second, but I was here, and I resolved that I would search for whatever I could find and then get the hell out of here as quickly as possible. The door yawned open even wider, and I stood on the edge between light and dark. All the sense and reason in my head screamed at me that this was a bad idea, but that voice faded to a whisper, slowly dispelled by some strange, imperious pull to go in. I switched on my flashlight in an effort to pierce the veil of inky blackness, and what I saw made my heart sink. The hallway was exactly like the one I had seen in my dream last night. Despite all of the clutter and garbage having been removed, it was unmistakably the very same hall. I fortified myself and stepped inside and moved to close the door, despite not wanting to. I was grateful to have the exit open, as if expecting that closing it would seal it shut permanently. But I couldn't leave it open in case someone noticed from outside and investigated. Or worse, called the police because they thought that some squatters or someone were coming in here to vandalize the place or do drugs. Reluctantly, I closed the door, sealing myself in with whatever ghosts of the past this place contained. I walked slowly into the living room, passing the bathroom I had seen before, though mercifully, the only smell was a faint mildew, and the bathtub was clean and empty rather than being filled with other unmentionable things. I entered the living room, and the sickening sense of déjà vu intensified. I thought that if you were to empty a garbage can of rotting meat and various other unpleasant objects, it would help recreate the mental picture of this room perfectly. I took a quick look around the first floor, though I had a suspicious feeling I wouldn't find anything on this level. I paused near the stairwell, the feeling of apprehension growing stronger every second. I did not want to go up those stairs where someone had died, but I was almost certain that what I was looking for was up there. The stairs creaked painfully loud as I ascended, just like they did last night. No, that was just a dream, I reminded myself. I got to the top, and to my relief, there was nothing up there. Just a simple second-floor hall, all the doors closed and with no lights on, sickly red or otherwise. This worked a great deal to alleviate my tension, and I relaxed at the sight, breathing a sigh of relief. I checked two of the doors that were closed in my dream and found nothing of interest, just another unremarkable bathroom and a small, empty bedroom. When I arrived at the final door, a bit of the tension returned. I knew nothing would be on the other side, just another empty room, most likely. Still, I paused as I reached for the door, suppressing a shudder as I remembered the dream and the creature that emerged from this door, caked in the blood of the latest unfortunate soul she had bestowed her special gift upon. I pushed the thoughts away, held my breath, and opened the door with a jolt. I let my breath out as I saw what I expected, an unremarkable room and nothing more. I couldn't decide if this was a good thing or a bad thing. I had come here seeking some answers, but I didn't know why I would find anything in what was presumably an empty house. I paused, unsure of what I was really expecting to accomplish. While I was contemplating my plight, a strange pattern on the wall drew my attention. The walls had plain and unassuming white-striped wallpaper plastered over them, but this area, near where it joined the window, had an odd mark on it that seemed to show through from underneath the wallpaper. I shined my flashlight on the spot and stepped closer to look at it. It was a dull reddish-brown color, and the mark appeared to be what may have been a portion of some letter. I noticed that it was covered up right at the point where the wallpaper seemed to start. Maybe the room was another color before? Or maybe they put this wallpaper up to cover up the blood? I shuddered. Dream or no dream, this was apparently where Zachary Thomas had been murdered, and worse. I stuck my finger into the gap between the fragments of what may have been a letter and pulled off a strip of the wallpaper that had been concealing it. My mind was not ready for the revelation that unfolded. Beneath the paper were what appeared to be words written in a shaky script on the wall. They appeared to have been written in deep red ink or paint, perhaps even blood. I pulled off enough of the paper that I could see what appeared to be a complete sentence, and what I read was deeply disturbing. The dream catcher, that is the key. It let loose this terrible creature. It must be able to seal it away again. Dreamcatcher? No. He couldn't possibly mean the same dreamcatcher. A dead man writing about the dreamcatcher I received from a missing woman in blood on his walls like a psychopath. It was all too much. I was completely stunned. I had to know more, so I proceeded to spend several minutes tearing down all of the obscuring wallpaper, and what I found was the chronicle and downward spiral of a madman. I looked at what appeared to be the beginning and read as much as I could bear. It can't be stopped, this thing. I know that now. Every time I go to sleep, I see them, their memories, how they died. I know I will be next. My time's almost out. In these dreams, only one thing has always occurred. One of the parts of the dreamcatcher turned into that abhorrent metal. There are 6 total, and 5 of them are now transformed. Somehow, I know that once the final one turns, it will be my time to join the others. I've tried to destroy the thing, but it appears above my bed every night. After I first suspected what it was, I threw it into the fire and thought I might be safe as it burned, just as you would expect anything made of such simple materials to burn. But at night, it comes back, and the dreams, or rather the memories, come back with it. These memories of her, or it, tormenting them before they died, torturing them, playing with them. And always, she knew I was there, watching, waiting, toying with me. Was I them, or was I myself? I don't know. I don't know who I am anymore. All I know is that she's coming for me, that succubus, and she's going to have me one way or the other. I have been awake now for the past 5 days. I know that she's waiting for me when I close my eyes. I am the last one. I am so afraid. There's nothing I can do, and no one believes my story. They all believe I'm crazy. Yes, maybe I am crazy. Maybe I'm losing my mind. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's all just in my head. I've never truly been hurt by these dreams, as disturbing as they are, and what I wouldn't give to have a nice, restful sleep. All these images and dreams are probably just delusions. Yes, that's it. Just delusions of a tired mind. No correlation or terrible cause, just the thoughts of a paranoid mind keeping me from having a relaxing rest. Yes, rest. That's what I need now. Nothing will get me, and I'm not afraid. I just need sleep. A little rest, and I'll feel better tomorrow. If something does happen, I'm sorry, Victor. I tried. Now, please, Lord, grant me rest. The writings ended at that point. Each portion had been affixed with a date, like a very grim journal entry. The date of the final entry was a day before the suspected murder had occurred. What in the hell is this? I screamed in panicked frustration. This had to be some hoax. It couldn't be happening. I had never been one to believe in the supernatural, and I couldn't wrap my head around this. There has to be some rational explanation, I shouted to myself. I sighed ruefully as I realized that the most likely explanation was that I was having a nervous breakdown. I paced relentlessly around the room, refusing to look anymore at the terrible markings on the wall. I started to feel sick and dizzy, like the smell and atmosphere of the place was getting to me, or just my own shock at trying to process this new information. I turned towards the door and saw what appeared to be a shadow. Was someone else in the house with me? The shadow moved and coalesced into an outline that was terribly familiar. I knew what it was the moment it took form.
"Aren't you the curious one?" "Oh, do remember, my sweet little thing, what curiosity did to the cat. I wouldn't want you to get hurt before I see you again in the flesh."
I let out a scream and stepped back. "No, you can't be real!" I cried, staring at the form. It appeared to be not quite there, as if it were only a shadow. "What happened to Sabrina?" I yelled at the thing, temporarily emboldened by the fact that it appeared almost insubstantial and almost certain I wasn't dreaming. The thing let out a harsh cackle, and then her voice dropped to a disturbing and almost seductive whisper.
"Oh, you poor thing. Don't you realize it yet? I am Sabrina, or at least all that's left of her. She found this dreamcatcher over a year ago and met with the same fate that you will soon meet. You never knew the real Sabrina."
She laughed, and she shifted, and her shadowy form melded into an image of Sabrina.
"Recognize me, my sweet little Simon?" "Oh, I do delight in your confusion, but rest assured, as I said, you never knew the real Sabrina. She's been dead since before we met. I merely used her likeness and memories to pass as her, so I could find a new plaything that would be lured under the spell of my charming little dreamcatcher. You would have her memories too, if it weren't for the fact that I needed them." She continued,
"I'm afraid little Sabrina was a bit of a shut-in and wasn't able to pass the gift along on her own as intended. It was exhausting wearing that shell, but now you are here, and soon, very soon, we shall meet in person again, once you have seen them all, that is."
She paused, as if checking some impulse. "We will be together again soon, and together I shall show you a sweet and never-ending dream that you've always wanted." She licked her lips as she revealed the horrible truth of what had been happening to me. Then, her hands sprang out to envelop me, and I ran back away from the thing, tripping over a large section of wallpaper I'd pulled off and bashing my head into the ground. I could feel no more as I drifted out of consciousness. I gasped and shot bolt upright. How long had I been out? "Oh no, oh no, oh no," I cried. I wasn't in the house anymore. I looked around. It was completely black, with just a sliver of light in this cramped confine I found myself in. I was in what I deduced was a dumpster, after I reached up to throw the lid open. A soft and pale moonlight glowed up above in the sky to greet me as I emerged. Oh God, was I moved when I was out? Or am I still out? It looked like I was at an abandoned construction site or steel mill or something. I immediately smelled a strong metallic scent, along with what I assumed was something burning. I had no clue where I was. My cell phone was lost along with the flashlight. I reached into my pocket again and produced a wallet. Only, this was not my wallet. It contained a driver's license for one Paul Anderson. How did I get this? I wondered. It's mine, of course, came a random and unbidden thought. Then I was reminded of the previous dream and the writings on the wall, and it made more sense. I had the wallet of Paul Anderson because this was his memory. Or dream, or dream of a memory. I didn't know anymore. I caught a reflection of myself in a window and saw that I indeed looked like a different person. Once I looked at my, his, face,
I felt a rush of memories that I knew couldn't be mine. She's coming. She's coming. Oh God, there's no escaping it. God damn that demon. Oh please, God save me. This is my last chance. There's only one night left. One sleep and it'll all be over. I'm taking matters into my own hands. She won't have me. I won't continue this horrible cycle. I might not be able to destroy this cursed item, but I can destroy myself and hopefully keep anyone else from finding that horrible relic. I never thought anything could drive me to suicide, but the alternative... No, I must do this. I will burn myself and this thing. Maybe if I go with it because of the connection, it will finally be destroyed. Or maybe I'll burn to death and some other poor soul will discover it. Either way, it'll be over. Courage. Just a little courage, and it will be done. God forgive me. I snapped out of my fugue and found myself standing near a smelting station or some type of incinerator. What the hell? How did I get here? I thought, confounded. Then, without thinking, I turned on the furnace. Oh, good God, no. I'm going to burn myself alive. That's what he did. Oh my God, no. As I leaned closer and stoked the flames, a fine mist began to gather around me. My heart sank, and I heard a familiar voice taunting in the forming vapors. Oh, don't do that, my sweet little thing. I haven't finished with you yet. And besides, I prefer my meat to be rare, not well done. The creature cackled. I, or rather Paul, was shocked by the voice and spun around only to bash his head on the steel beam overhead. It still felt like I had been struck in the head despite it being a memory. Oh no, I thought. He must have lost consciousness and fallen asleep for the last time. My own head was swimming. I saw that the dream catcher had materialized overhead as I lost consciousness. Only 5 tassels? 4 were metal, with a 5th slowly transforming to join its fellows and symbolize the blade which would pierce the heart and soul of me, of Paul, and seal our fate. I was doomed, and through the hazy silhouette of my vision, I saw it looking down on me. Oh my, but you are running out of time, aren't you? For him, it was his last. But for you, a few more nights, yes. More time for you to enjoy my company, I suppose. And more time for me to enjoy your suffering. Soon, you can finally and truly sleep deep in the boundless, wondrous sleep of oblivion. And I will be free to see to your sweet, sweet dreams. The thing purred at me, licking its terrible lips. But alas, for tonight, we're almost out of time. I hate to end this so quickly, but it looks as if you're about to wake up, and I would hate to have you miss out on the best part. It raised one prodigious claw and plunged it deep into my chest. She paused, enjoying the look of agony on my face, then ripped my still beating heart out of my chest. I began to fade away, falling into pain and agony. I looked out with my dying breath and saw Paul's startled expression in the shattered glass of a nearby window, and in front, the creature with an evil grin. I witnessed the body. I saw the fire uselessly burning in the background. My consciousness faded, and I saw the futile effort, and indeed the last effort, of another unfortunate victim. As I departed the memory, I somehow knew that his death was not a release, as I heard his screams well after his body had died. I woke up back in the house to see the sun rising through the window. My head was throbbing. I looked up, and to my horror, there was the dream catcher, one shiny new metallic spike where previously there had been a plain piece of cloth. No! I shouted while I stared in disbelief. I paused and considered something. Mine had 8. It had more than the others. Then I realized in horror that each of the tassels represented a victim and that person's dying memory, their final dream. I sat there for a long while in shock and utter hopelessness. Eventually, I collected myself and my things and discreetly exited the house and went home. I had no idea of what to do next, no hope of rescue. I went back home to brood and ponder on my fate. Time is almost at an end. There's no need to recount the other souls who died. No, not died, were imprisoned by that demon, to be toyed with and killed again and again and again in a never-ending dream of death and misery. The agony and madness of all their tormented memories coalescing into my own is maddening. Dreams, memories, I could not tell the difference anymore. I'm dead. No, still alive. What was my name? Paul? Cynthia? Gail? Simon? I can't remember. I've always been terrible with names. To my credit, I managed to make it this far. I thought I could become a professional insomniac. I wish I could say I found some magic cure, some paranormal investigator who would come in and save the day in my time of need. But I found the rest of the world unhelpful and ignorant of my pleas. Maybe I don't care if this thing keeps going. Maybe the doubters of the world need to be shown what happens if you never listen to a cry for help, no matter how crazy it sounds. Maybe they will stop it someday, but I won't be there. Or maybe I will be. Maybe number 9 will be one of those doubters who would never have believed my story until they see me. See the metal spike that represents me, and experience the memory that is the hollow shade of who I once was, all through the lens of the nightmare dreams contained in that abhorrent dream catcher. Yes, perhaps then they'll have to believe, but who will believe them? I am fading, the last of my energy running out. Nothing will stop it now, my final sleep, and my final terrible dream that will never end. No more running, no more hiding, no more. It wouldn't do good anyway. If I am to be consigned to this fate, then so be it. I only wish that people take heed and know that if you long to feel the lucid dream, remember that there are some things in your dreams that you don't want to come true. I stop writing and lay my head down and quietly drift off to sleep. My eyes open again, and I look up and see the sharp outline of the dream catcher, its spikes now complete and clinking together like some nightmare dinner bell for the damned, ringing to signal my fate. This is the end. Finally. I roll over and gasp. I see Sabrina next to me. She smiles. "Hello, stranger," she says with a wink. "You were tossing and turning. Are you all right?" "What? It can't be," I stammer. "It's okay, you're awake now. That's what matters. I was worried," she says as she embraces me. Oh my God, could it really be? Could all of this have just been some terrible nightmare? Maybe that's it. Maybe it was all a bad dream after all. She hugs me harder, and I breathe a sigh of relief and peace that the harrowing events of the last several days didn't allow before, and I smile at her. She leans in close to my ear and whispers, "Dream your dead dream with me now, forever." My eyes widen, my body's paralyzed, and the horror sets in. The last thing I can see is a clawed hand gently caressing my face and the ghostly outline of a 9th spike appearing above. The last thing I hear is the nightmarish voice one last time telling me, "Do not fear, my precious little thing. It will all be over soon. Just close your eyes and keep telling yourself, this is just a bad dream." I do, and I scream. You've been listening to I Never Used to Dream by Red Bad Andy. Red Bad Andy has been writing short horror fiction for a little over a year now, mostly posted to the No Sleep subreddit. You can find more of his work there under the username BadAndyTheRed. Well, I'd say that's a nice close to tonight's episode. I suspect that many of you will be heading to bed yourselves after listening, and this certainly sets the stage. Thanks to Red Bad Andy for tonight's story. And also, as a side note, as I was perusing his Reddit profile, I discovered that he's a fellow Warhammer 40K enthusiast. It's always fun to find another resident of the grim darkness of the near future. As always, thanks to you, dear listeners, for joining me. Things here in Western New York are starting to get very chilly, and the isolation of the winter months is always tempered by getting to share these stories with you, fine folks. Until next time, stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted and narrated by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Original music provided by Eric Peabody and Nikki McSorley. Finalization by Eric Peabody and Craig Groshek. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at natalie@chillingtalesfordarknights.com to have your work considered for future production. Seeing as how we're all living in a technological nightmare of our own devising, I'll ask you to follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. Not only will you have appeased the dark gods of cyberspace, but you'll be kept in the loop as we prepare more terrifying content. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend becoming a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Otis Gyre's Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, Paul J. McSorley's Fear from the Heartland, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights. As for me personally, I'm on most social media as Viking Guitar or Viking Guitar Productions. I'm always on the lookout for new stories to narrate and new music projects to mix or master. If that's of interest to you, feel free to reach out and we can talk turkey. Also, I will be back next week with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.
Heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic.
Keep your eyes on the road.
Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Moto Casino.